Television in Kennewick, Washington, says the Wireless Telecommunications Bureau of the Federal Communications Commission, this is the FCC, would like to warn its applicants and licensees of wireless services that the problem is real and pervasive. Some early cursory examinations appear to have underestimated the seriousness and extent of the problem. Estimates of fixes worldwide, including system replacements and upgraded software, run into the hundreds of millions of dollars and beyond. Okay. So first the government tells us, no problem. But then the government says, gonna run into hundreds of millions of dollars and beyond, and its problem is real and pervasive. Make up your mind, Washington, which is it? Sitting in for Art Bell. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Hilly Rose. With nothing to do, just as they did during the John Kennedy Jr. situation, all wondering, what can we say next? I mean, nothing was happening. And they went on and on and on and on. I guess that's why they're so highly paid, right? All right, enough of me. Let's get to you and your phone calls. Hi, this is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please?
I'm Dan. Calling from Idaho Falls.
All right, Dan. What's on your mind?
There is a UFO spacecraft fleet on the ground in Canada. The public and the press is invited to inspect from the air. The location is 64 degrees north latitude, 95 degrees west longitude. That's near Baker Lake, Canada.
Now, wasn't Baker Lake the once before? Didn't they have sightings there?
There is over 355 spacecraft on the ground.
Well, Dan, I wouldn't think of disputing you, but how do you know this?
I represent the other side. You see, President Clinton ordered a war against another planet, and our U.S. spacecraft were taken away from us and put at the location I just mentioned.
Well,
unconditional surrender of the United States is demanded, and it shall occur in the next week or so.
Are you asking for it through the medium of this program, or are you in touch with President Clinton?
No, I've already told him.
When did
he
you tell?
He is stonewalling.
Actually, he's in Kosovo, but that's beside the point. He's stonewalling. What is it you want him to do now?
He's required to surrender the United States of America. He lost the war.
In other words, we fought a war and the United States lost.
Yes.
Okay, when was this war fought?
The engagement occurred on July 14th.
Of this year?
Yes.
And what planet are you from?
I'm from this planet. I represent the Galactic Federation.
Oh, in other words... In other words, you're
chosen by them to speak for them.
Why did they choose you? Are you an attorney?
No. I'm a physicist.
So why did they choose you of all the people in the world?
Right now there's a supernova of our sun pending. Now that's unrelated to the war, although it may have started the war. But
you may have started it? Is that what you said?
I was talking to or communicating with the U.S. government about the supernova of our sun and telling them that the aliens were here to help us, and that may have started the war.
I see.
I'm not exactly sure, but that may be what started the war.
Well, Dan, what are these 355 spacecraft doing at the moment? Are they just sitting there going dip, 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 waiting for the president to acknowledge that he's lost?
The fuel has been removed from the spacecraft. The digital keys are in my possession, so they can't even get into them. So
what are these beings?
Paperweights on the ground.
Well, where are they from? You said you're a human, so where are they from?
They're from a couple hundred thousand planets in this galaxy.
A couple hundred thousand planets?
Yes.
In other words, that's why
the galaxy is full of life.
That's why they're called the Federation, because it's a federation of many, many planets. Is that right?
Yes. And you see, I borrowed the name from the Star Trek series.
I didn't want to mention that, but I did sort of cotton to it. I'm trying to help here, Dan. It's a staggering news, and
The formation is so big you can see it from a satellite photo.
Which satellite photo? Just any satellite? NASA
satellite.
The weather satellite. And you have a picture of the weather satellite?
No, I don't. But,
is it on the web? Is it on the
web? Go to the web.
I was
going to
ask
find
you.
Find it.
By the way, you go to NASA? www.nasa?
I don't have the web address. Sorry.
Okay, so it may be NOAA, I guess, would probably be more likely.
It's probably the GOES weather satellite.
The weather satellite.
Yeah.
And so it's there. You can see 355 spacecraft. Now, are these, I mean, it's like a mothership and little ships beyond that, or what?
There's a variety of ships. It's our entire U.S. spacecraft fleet.
Oh, well, you keep saying our. On the one hand, you're saying you represent them, but they're not our. They're because you're a human.
It's the U.S. spacecraft fleet.
Oh, the U.S. spacecraft. I'm sorry, I wasn't understanding that. So we here in the United States have spacecraft, is what you're telling me.
Yes, we used to have a very large fleet.
I mean, these are not like the spacecraft that go up with the astronauts. This is something else?
No, these are spacecraft that work just like UFOs.
And that's why what we've been seeing for so long surrounding the Earth, and why, you know, there has been a tremendous number of sightings recently within the last couple of months. And are you saying that that's what we've been seeing up in the sky? Is this war going on?
No. You see, the U.S. has spacecraft, and so does the Galactic Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what you've been seeing in the skies is from the Galactic Federation.
Okay, so were they...
They've been trying to signal us to get our attention.
Well, I understand that, Dan, but what I'm trying to get from you is, what is it that they want total surrender of the United States? For what reason? Why not Russia? Why not France? Why not Greece? Why the United States of America?
President Clinton ordered a war against another planet. That carries an automatic death penalty for a planet if you actually carry it out. Now, they were stopped from carrying it out because of my orders. So we got some leeway here.
How much time do we have?
Well, the supernova of our sun shall occur on October 18th.
So we have until October 18th?
You probably have another week or so before it becomes too late to stop the supernova.
On October 18th?
Yes.
Okay.
There's quite a bit of preparation that needs to be done.
Now,
you see, arsenic is the material needed to stop the supernova, and we don't have that much in inventory.
So therefore, we're defenseless?
Not totally. If we would start now, we can stop the supernova.
Okay, Dan, I'm sorry to be picking little details here, but this is so startling that I have to sort of ask this question. You say that you were able to get the keys and lock the aliens out.
Not
from
the aliens.
Well, what do you call it?
These are U.S. spacecraft on the ground at Baker Lake, Canada. I have the digital keys to the U.S. spacecraft.
That's what I didn't understand. These were digital keys. I thought they were like the keys to a car.
You know, like a little number that you
mm-hmm.
punch in.
Right. And how did you get that?
I represent the Galactic Federation. I was given that information.
Well, I just thought you just told me that these craft are the United States craft.
Yes.
Well, then how did the Galactic Federation get their combination to 355 craft? Where do they get the
I'm not going to go into that.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, in other words, logical questions you won't answer.
Well, I have the information. It looks like 5, 6, and 7-digit numbers.
Hmm. Well, Dan, so where are
Why
the...
Why don't we repeat the location and let people...
Well, you've given it to
look.
Me before. Canada, 64 degrees north, latitude 95 west. What I'm trying to understand is... Where are the Galactic Federation ships if these 355 United States spacecraft are sitting at Baker Lake? Where's the Federation right now?
They're in orbit.
And they can stay in orbit forever?
Yes.
I see. So forget Y2K, worry about October 18th. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. And
Y2K is rather minor.
It certainly seems to be. And President, I saw him on television tonight in Kosovo. He didn't look too worried. Why do you suppose that is? I realize he's stonewalling, but most presidents do. And he did that with Monica Lewinsky, so we understand he's a master at it. But why do you suppose he's just ignoring this?
It's too big for him to deal with.
Well, who's bigger than the President of the United States?
No, I'm saying that some people just shut down when they get a big problem.
Ah, I see. Okay. So what is the purpose of your call tonight, to let us know about this?
I wanted the press to go see and take pictures and publish.
Okay. And what do you think that will do?
At least it'll get attention to the issue.
Well, I think you've gotten attention with an awful lot of people tonight, but I'm still trying to understand just a little bit about what's the end product here. If we surrender to the Galactic Federation, what's going to happen to us?
I will be the military receiver of the United States.
So you're going to be the new leader of the United States?
They do not occupy. You see, our planet is in trouble, and I don't think they would want to occupy right now.
And then why do they want us to surrender?
They can't tolerate wars like that.
Against themselves?
See, there's a law. They disallow wars between planets.
Hmm.
And it's an automatic death penalty for an entire planet to go to war against another planet.
Darn, I didn't realize the ACLU was that powerful. Okay, Dan, I really appreciate the call out there in Idaho Falls, and I hope you feel better, and I thank you very much. Good night. Well, you heard it right here first on Coast to Coast AM. There are 355 United States space vehicles parked at Baker Lake in Canada. Why the United States vehicles are parked in Canada, I'm not exactly sure. But who am I to challenge this? Check your weather satellite, friends, and you'll see these 355 spacecraft just sitting there. And check your supply of arsenic and old lace and see whether you got enough to defend on October 18th. Hey, anything is possible, especially in the Ardbell world. Take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Where are you calling from, please?
Connecticut.
Connecticut. Have you seen any spacecraft around?
Not recently.
I see. Well, you may see a whole bunch of them based on the previous call. Go ahead, sir.
I would like to discuss electrogravity as discovered by Gary Mike Colley Swano.
You certainly can. I know nothing about it, but go ahead. I tell you, my guest tonight would know, my guest Mark Bean would know a good deal about it, and he won't be on for about a half an hour, but you go ahead and mention what you want.
This is my theory.
Mm-hmm.
Charged particles moving through time are responsible for the physical effect of gravity. That is, parallel currents attract. Parallel space currents attract, and that's electromagnetism. Parallel time currents attract, and that's electrogravity. If you want to know more, please contact an Arthur Fleming Associates in San Diego, California.
Okay. I very much appreciate the call, sir. Thank you so very much.
Thank
you. Is there a full moon out tonight? I don't think so. Close. Ooh-wee. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Do I dare play telephone call bingo again? yeah. All right. Let's go on a caller and say, what's your first name and where are you calling from, please? Hello.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm well. Where are you calling from?
New York.
Yeah, what's your first name?
Ray.
Yeah, Ray, go ahead.
This is the first time listening to this to your station. My friend told me that he heard on the station a couple of days ago about a ship, that they're making a ship that they're going to have in space to travel around the moon. How true is that?
Let me go back a step. There are ships that are going to travel through space and do what on the moon?
No. Someone by the name of Bob Bigelow put $500 million
right. up. That's right.
Oh, yes. That's what I meant.
That was on the show Tuesday night.
Okay.
Yes, he's planning a hotel, actually, and it's going to go to the moon. That is absolutely true, what you heard.
Okay, thank you. Can I ask another question?
But I wouldn't book passage yet. I think it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
Question?
All right. Thank you for the call, Ray.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah. All right, do we have another call here? Let's say good evening. I'm Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please? Okay, Franklin. Go ahead. This is Hilly Rose. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Well, you were talking about Y2K earlier.
Yeah, I mentioned it.
Well, I have addressed hundreds of local governments here in Michigan in regards to contingency plans for Y2K, and I felt it was necessary for people to understand some of the latest information that's coming out from FEMA and President's Council in regards to what they call the endgame strategy for Y2K. One interesting thing is FEMA says that the federal response plan will be in operation during the conversion period, and the Department of Defense says this conversion period begins September 1st of this year. So this
I'm a little lost. What's the conversion period?
Well, the conversion period is the time of quote-unquote danger, where there could be certain things that happen, whether it be run-on banks or other technological failures, such as the GPS that you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
August 21st, the September 9th, 1999 problem, the 99 problem.
So it's going to be a hell. It's going to be a hell of a fall and winter, right?
That's what it starts to appear. In fact, Britain. There was an article over in the Sunday Times in Britain on July 18th. That talked about the 2,000 troops being pulled out of Kosovo to deal with the protecting government buildings and.
Right, I saw that, and I wonder, well, why are they pulling them out now? It's a little early, isn't it?
Well, it's for this quote unquote conversion period that you said that you're confused about. See, one thing that's happening is there is a lack of shortage of federal resources, state resources. They're anticipating problems with stockpiling and things like this. For example, you have the city of Lubbock, Texas, stockpiling 1 million gallons of diesel fuel. You have many different electric utilities around the country that are stockpiling months of coal for their coal-fired plants. They're obviously concerned about potential bank runs. But the reason I called is people need to understand that as you were reading some articles earlier in the program, we are not as near in the sunshine as many have tried to let us to believe. In fact, the Securities Exchange Commission had mentioned that only, I believe it was 22 or 28 foreign clearinghouses and brokerages were ready in a recent study. So there are many, many things that are occurring around the world right now that have consequences that have to do with Y2K, and people must wake up because there are.
Well, how can you wake up if you got the United States government saying everybody's compliant or almost compliant, and it will be by the time you know it's there? Don't worry about your checks. Don't worry about anything. Excepting, I see here the FCC is warning its applicants and licensees the problem's real and pervasive. So, I think you're right. We do have to wake up from two point standpoints: one, that the services don't break down, and two, that it's really a great time for somebody who's interested in a takeover of this government to do it.
Well, you know what's interesting? Let me add this to what you just said. The U.S. Naval War College issued a report the beginning of June in 1999, and on page 8, they stated, they showed like 7 or 8 different phases of Y2K. For example, they had the unfolding phase, the onset, they had the mania phase, they had the peak phase, and the exit phase. Well, guess what they had under this exit phase was legal deconstruction and new rulers. New rulers. What are they talking about here?
beats the heck out of me, but I'll tell you, I have friends at the U.S. Naval War College, and I'll call them and report back on it next week.
It would be very interesting.
Okay, my friend, thank you for the call. Hi there, this is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please?
Yeah, hi, Hilly. This is Earl. I'm in Blackfoot, Idaho. I used to call you about 30 years ago when you were in Jack London Square in Oakland.
Oh, boy, that really goes back.
Well, congratulations, my friend. I was talking to the producer. When will Bob Lazar, do you have any idea when you or Art will have Bob Lazar back on?
Gee, you know, Art does his own bookings as I do, and I've never had him on. So really, it's really up to Art as to determine when he would have him back on again.
But I'll tell you, I love to listen to him. It's very, very fascinating, and I'm glad you're a little bit older than I am. I just turned 64, but I'm sure glad. It's wonderful to hear you, and big time on the air. It really is, my friend.
All right, Earl. Thank you very much.
Thank
Hi, this is Hilly Rose. Where are you calling from, please?
Hey,
hello.
Hilly.
Yeah.
John from Gainesville, Florida, listening on 97 Sky FM.
All right. Are you the one that's feeding us into Cuba?
No.
Okay.
No. I've got a couple things to mention before the thing.
You got 2 minutes. Go ahead, John.
Okay. How about having a music show one time?
What kind of music?
Like, say, or any, just off the top of my head. Remember the Harmonicats?
Yes.
Or
with that little guy, what was his name?
Not the little guy, the Harmonicats.
Oh, the Harmonicats. Yeah, I do.
Are any of those three still alive?
I haven't a clue. I certainly don't see their...
One of them might be a good guest one night.
To talk about what?
To talk about the fact how the harmonica is being used today in pop music and how it was used back in the 50s in pop music. A lot of jazz is being done on harmonica today.
Yeah,
might,
that's true.
It might be
true.
Good to have like a music show that's a little offbeat. And maybe have
okay, I think this show has been offbeat enough tonight, and I thank you very much, John, for the call. Can we start this show all over again? Did I do something wrong when I walked in? What is going on here? Holy moly. Hilly Rose, in for Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM.
Gonna be alright. Rock-a-bye, rock-a-bye.
Sometimes Art Bell gives his long.
Not for a while. What else? Let me just give you the get the house cleaning done here, folks. We just get so many emails saying, what's the address to this, who is the guest, etc., etc. If you will please, just go to www.hillyrose.com. All of that information is there. It is Art Bell. It'll switch over to Art Bell's website. And the place to reach me by email is hilly@hillyrose.com. My fax number, 831-685-FLAG, 831-685-3524. What else? I think that's enough for now. Oh, if you want tapes of any show, just call, free call, 1-800-917-4278. And you can hear that caller who called in about the 355 UFOs that are parked there because we lost a war. So don't worry about a thing. In just a moment, the mad scientist, Mark Bean, and... listen, some of the stuff he talks about is just as fanciful as that caller. And I want to tell you, you're going to have your mouth open, but what he's talking about is real. And that's what makes it so absolutely astounding and absorbing. We will continue here after about this in just a second. But he has looked at them and said, what makes them go? I mean, you know, we have the standard scientist that says, no way could we reach certain planets way out there because, you know, we'd run out of fuel, we'd do this, we'd do that. Even the satellite that we're going to plunge into the moon in a couple of hours is run out of fuel. It's spent. And so Mark is looking at it and saying, maybe that ain't the way to go. Maybe we should be looking at how did the UFOs get here? In other words... It reminds me of that great architect who said, don't let's talk about the design of a building. Let's decide, or in how many rooms it's going to have, let's decide how you want to use the building. And so he looked at it from a totally different way. And that's what Mark does. He doesn't just say, well, how do I get from here to there? He said, well, how do those UFOs get from there to here? And if we could figure that out, then maybe we could do better than the 355 spaceships that are at Baker Lake. What about that, Mark? Did you hear that call?
No, I missed that call.
Darn, that was pretty good. He claims that we've fought a galactic war. The Galactic Federation fought a war with the United States, and that President Clinton's been given a certain amount of time to surrender, and he just, by golly, won't do it. And so they've grounded all of the UFO fleet of the United States of America, which amounts to 355 ships, and parked them up in Canada for some reason. So you're not aware of any United States fleet, are you?
No one told me anything.
Well, see, that's
except
the way it is
you.
In this world. Yeah, well, you, now you know. We keep you informed right here on the Hilly Rose Show. Okay. Mark, you're maybe we should start with, see, I was able to finally pronounce the word anti-gravitics, or electrogravitics, rather. I'm sorry.
That's it.
Yeah. Maybe you ought to tell us what that is before we start looking at the shapes of UFOs and what you've been doing in that field.
Okay. Basically, electrogravitics, in simple terms, means that when you apply certain kinds of energy to certain kinds of metal of specific shape and design, it causes them to move in a specific direction.
And do you feel that's the basic clue to the UFOs?
Yes, definitely. It explains so many different things, and all I'm doing basically is just observing the world around us. I came up with the idea by studying lightning. I wanted to know why lightning came from a cloud, hit the ground, and had a return stroke going up.
And you and Ben Franklin, huh?
Yeah. And came to some conclusions, and through experimentation, I saw that when you have two polarities being negative and positive, the negative is always attracted to the positive. And a cumulus cloud, for example, is negatively charged. When it builds up to its potential, in other words, it fills up with so much electron charge that it breaks down. It has a dielectric collapse. And it erupts in a bolt of lightning, and the lightning fingers out. It branches out looking for an opposite charge. So it goes in the direction of the Earth, which is the opposite charge. And I found by having two pieces of metal and charging one up positive and one negative over 50,000 volts, which the average person doesn't have access to, you'll see that it will make the negatively charged terminal move in the direction of the positive terminal, and that's how it all unfolded. And then later on I found out that there was a scientist in the 50s named Thomas Townsend Brown, T. Townsend Brown, who coined the phrase electrogravitics. And he found, just like I did, that the disk is the best shape, and that, again, when you charge the main body of the ship negatively and the leading edge of the ship positively, it'll move in the direction of that positive lead. And in simple terms, it's kind of like the horse and the carrot. And the driver has a pole with the carrot attached in front of the horse, and that horse is going to keep chasing that carrot no matter where it's pointed, and that causes a given force of motion in the given direction of the carrot. And that's what's happening with the experiments that we made, and like T. Townsend Brown did before it went classified in the 50s.
Wait, classified by whom?
He did a demonstration for the United States Air Force in the 50s, and it instantly went classified under Project Winterhaven. And it was really never heard from in public circles ever since. And fortunately enough, I have some very confidential connections with the Brown family, and through another scientist, Andrew Bullen, who is gave me insights and confirmed my suspicions based on my own experiments that this is very valid research, and the effects are definitely a reality and not science fiction.
Let me go back two steps, if I may, to get this picture. You're saying that the horse and the carrot, so the carrot would be one polarity and the horse another?
Right. The carrot would represent the positive terminal, and the horse would represent the negative terminal. So the main body, or the disc, would be negatively charged, and then either the top of the disc or the leading edge would be positively charged.
Go ahead.
And when given a sufficient amount of charge, it would cause it to move in the direction. So it's basically chasing its own nose.
All right. Well, would this then be perpetual motion?
No, not at all.
Why not?
Because you have to supply the energy. You have to acquire the energy. As long as you kept pumping energy into it, it would keep going. And the longer you had the engine engaged, it would keep going faster. But still, you have to, it's not an over unity machine. You have to pump energy into it, and a lot of energy at that.
Okay, the other question I wanted to ask you was Project Winterhaven. I don't think I've heard of that before.
Yeah, you can look up the details on that on Andrew Bolin's site, which is soteria.com. That's soteria.com. And almost all the details that they're willing to go public with are on that site. And it tells the whole story of Thomas Townsend Brown and the research.
Okay, can you just tell me in 10 seconds, what is Project Winterhaven? It's a governmental project.
Yeah, it was a project that, like I said earlier, that Thomas Townsend Brown did a demonstration, and he had two discs tethered to a central pole. And when he sent a sufficient charge, I believe it was over 50,000 volts at that time, he got the discs to lift and move around on this tethered pole to about 35 miles an hour, and it thoroughly impressed all the brass in the Air Force, and then they classified it. And
So Winterhaven is what Brown did,
right?
But then the military
took over.
Okay, I was confused because I thought that there was some kind of Project Winterhaven that the military had, and that they were somehow absorb this information into that project. But no, the project is what Brown did, and the military then immediately classified it.
Yeah, they classified it and put it under Project Winterhaven, and the NSA deemed it national security, and Brown was never allowed to talk about it publicly from that point on.
So if I go to soteria.com, what am I going to find there?
You're going to find the whole story of Brown. You're going to see AVI files of the discs. You'll actually see old footage that were digitized of Brown in his laboratory with these discs, and you'll see them lift up and move around and
I'm confused, Mark, because you're telling me the information is classified and has never come to light, but then we can go on the website and see it. I'm confused.
We being Andrew Bolin and myself, have compiled a massive amount of information through key sources in the Brown family that are no longer with us, and we've brought that information public.
Even though the government has classified it?
Correct.
Well, doesn't that put you in some kind of jeopardy?
I imagine to some degree. But I do believe that this technology belongs to the people, and that Thomas Townsend Brown really deserves the credit that that he deserves so much. It's just he's like a Tesla. Everything that he did was just incredible contributions, not only in propulsion systems, but in audio technology. He was working on some energy cells, he made diaphragmless speakers that used no coil. It was electrostatic speakers, which, by the way, have some of the best acoustical definition of stereo that I've ever heard. So he was also the founder of NICAP.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, and in one of his one of the videos that you can see, that you can download, you'll see on the blackboard in the background, there'll be a cross section of George Adamski's saucer. So he was also very interested in UFOs as well.
All right, so what we want to get to, I guess, the next couple of minutes or maybe into the next half hour, is how you got involved with looking at UFOs. When did you see your, I mean, these UFOs that you're looking at, to check to see what their propulsion system is, where did you see them? Are they somebody's idea of a UFO? Have you seen UFOs?
I've seen two UFOs, one when I was a youngster in St. Louis, Missouri, and one in the Las Vegas area. And that's when I really said, okay, there's something to this, because there's no way that's an airplane, and it doesn't look like it's man-made. And I've seen it twice now.
But you could determine the shape of it from what you saw?
In both cases, yes. They were both disc-like shape.
Well, then you had to be close enough to them to be able to check that for sure.
Yes. One, I believe it was about 2 miles away, and the other one about 300 feet away.
Wow. All right, Mark, I want to get into that much more deeply about these flying saucers and the shapes of these saucers and where the information comes from and how you feel about the propulsion systems. Fascinating stuff. And my friends, if Mark says they fly, they fly. We will continue here talking about flying saucers and their systems after a brief pause. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am Hilly Rose, sitting in for Art Bell. A guy by the name of Robert Bigelow was on Art Show Tuesday night. He's going to be building this hotel that will go to the stars. And all he's looking for is the propulsion system to do it. Maybe you want to get in contact with Robert Bigelow, and the two of you get together. You're in the same town, and he could use what you plan. He's putting apparently $500 million into it, so that's a lot of bucks.
Yeah, that would be worth looking into for sure.
Okay, or maybe Robert Bigelow will call you. Who knows? All right, let's go back to this whole issue of UFOs and their propulsion. Now, you've seen dozens of photos all over the world, and what you claim is that they're really just some basic shapes, no matter where these UFOs are seen, whether they're seen in Australia or in Switzerland or in the United States or in Britain. There are just a few basic shapes. Is that correct?
Yeah, and they're all weather balloons and swamp gas.
Okay, a little scientific humor there.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I know. I hope so. But they are... What are these shapes? What are we talking about? Are we talking about saucers? Are we talking about the Bell Dome? What are we talking about in these shapes?
Well, I've found that they're basically almost the same exact craft that have been photographed and videotaped from all over the world within the same time zones by people that don't even know each other. And if that was a court case, it would have been settled a long time ago. That right there is pretty much overwhelming evidence. Just in that one point. But what I found was that not only are there the same exact style, but very similar styles that are just variants on the same theme, and that being basically two parabolics, two like umbrellas that are meeting each other with a little dome on top and sometimes a little dipole or an antenna on the very top. And they're all basically the same design. There's usually a two convex, like a disc, and then some kind of ring, and then a dome believed to be a cockpit, and like I said, a little dipole or a spike on top. And I started looking at that, and I figured that no matter who's inside or where they came from or what the craft's made of, it has to use a lot of energy to run this device. And I went back to the basics. I started investigating UFO reports and filtering out, you know, the people that are starving for attention or excitement to the real credible UFO reports, which is a hard thing to do in itself. And then I started finding more common denominators, like the shape. And maybe we can have some listener participation and
in the next half hour.
In the next half hour, and we can get things that people have heard or seen themselves about what the craft looked like, what the side effects are, did it photograph well, and if it didn't, why, different things like that. The symptoms of a sighting or even contact. But basically, there's always the similar symptoms, like people feel cold or they get a cold breeze coming from the saucer, or there's signaling lights around the rim of the disc. And all of these things, I have all of these symptoms in my experiments I have recreated in the discs. And for example, the lights around the rim, that is actually an intense corona buildup. Because of the rim itself, the actual shape is part of the propulsion. The rim itself is where electrons concentrate. And when electrons concentrate, it produces a lavender-like plasma. And the byproduct of that is three things. One, a natural refrigerant. Two, it produces ozone. And three, it produces nitrous oxide, which it gives some people the feeling of euphoria. They're actually catching a buzz from the saucer emissions.
Well, you have to get mighty close to the saucer to get high.
Or it depends on how much charge is going over the saucer and, of course, how close they are to it during the time.
Well, what do you suppose is giving them the energy?
Well, I think that there's several ways. And again, I want to stress the point that I'm not giving the definitive answer to propulsion of UFOs. I just think this is one of many ways that a saucer could work. Like Bob Lazar talked about element 115 with the total annihilation reaction. And basically that means that when matter and antimatter get together, it produces an extreme release of energy, and that energy results in heat, and that heat is then converted into thermal electric energy, and then they can use that energy to activate the electrogravitic drive, if you will. Or like Bob Lazar talked about with the gravity amplifiers and actually folding space. So you're actually traveling a very short distance physically, motion-wise, but you're making a big page fold, if you will, going from one part of the galaxy to the other.
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding that word. Page fold?
If you take a page, a piece of paper, and you write A on one corner in the upper left and B on the other, and you fold the page so A and B meet, then you'll see what I'm talking about. Basically, when you engage a gravity amplifier, it's folding space. The page represents space between point A and point B, being different planets, if you will, in the galaxy. When you engage a gravity amplifier, it creates this dip that makes the A and B meet. So you physically travel a very short distance, and then you disengage the drive, and all of a sudden you've folded space. You've gone a great distance in a non-linear way.
So if I can borrow from Star Trek, it's sort of like suddenly going to warp speed?
Yeah, in a sense. But you're bending space-time. A conventional scientist say, like you mentioned earlier, that it's just there would be no reason for an intelligent species to travel hundreds of millions of light years to come visit us. It's just not a practical thing. But that's linear thinking. And we've only been in technically industrial for about 200 years, and that's a very small amount of time. Think about intelligent species on other worlds that have been technical for millions of years that have perfected all sorts of different ways that we can't even imagine yet. And I'm sure that they wouldn't refer to linear travel in the conventional sense that our modern-day scientists do. I'll give you a good example, the Casimir effect. Basically, that is been proven here on Earth at Fermilabs up right outside of Chicago, and it's two high-voltage plates, and they're separated by what they call a dielectric. That's the energy in between these two plates. And at a remote location, there are two other identical plates with a dielectric in between. When an intense electrical charge is sent to these plates, they shot a proton through one, it disintegrated and instantly reintegrated at the remote location. So,
through the air.
Yeah, thinking on well, what it's saying, the experiment is saying that there's something that is faster than light, and that is that the energy is inducted.